So we are reading the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is an incredible book of wisdom. You see, the Bhagavad Gita is a book of questions and answers, isn't it? From morning to evening, people are asking different questions. Just like we have Google, so you can ask Google any single question you want, isn't it? Nowadays they say Google is God. Right, because they seemingly Google can answer any question you have. But how deeply Google can give you the answers that you're looking for in a very personal way, that is yet to be seen. But when we open the Gita, we're not just reading a conversation of questions and answers which took place many, many thousands of years ago. But actually, we're reading the questions that sit within every single person's heart. Can you name me some question that you think goes through everyone's mind at some point in their life?
What's the purpose of life?
What's the purpose? Why are we here in the first place? What's the purpose of life? Yes, that goes through your heart. What else? What other kind of questions?
Who am I?
Who am I? Yeah. Sometimes we wonder, like, who am I? They call it in the world an identity crisis. One time, recently someone came to me and he said, "How old are you?" I said, 41. He said, "Okay, you're coming to the zone." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Midlife crisis." Because generally when people reach about 42, 43... they start sometimes having a crisis of identity, like, who am I? What did I do my whole life? Where am I going? So yeah, identity crisis. What other questions come to people's minds? Yes? Yeah, what happens when we die? Because every day around us, people are dying, isn't it? Yamaraj, who's the god of death, he asked Yudhisthira, who was very wise, he said, "What's the most amazing thing in the world?" And you know what Yudhisthira's reply was? Ahani ahani bhutani gachanti ha yamalayam sheshastavaramichanti kimascharyam ataparam. He said, "What is the most amazing thing in the world?" Yudhisthira said, "Ahani ahani bhutani, every single day people are dying. Shesha stavara michanti, but I think I'm going to live here forever. Kim ascharyam ataparam." What can be more amazing than that? Leo Tolstoy, he said, "I know that everyone has to die, but I was hoping an exception would be made in my case." The Chinese proverb says, whether you're the king, the queen, or the pawn, at the end of the game, everyone ends up in the box. Yeah. But is death the end? No. Death is not a full stop. Death is just a comma to the next. So yes, what happens after death? We are wondering, where is it? Where are those people who I loved, who are no longer here? Are they still seeing me? Are they still somewhere? Will I meet them again? Yes. Who believes in soulmates? Yes, souls together, life after life. Does it exist? So many questions, isn't it? People have so many questions. Is there any other question that's on your mind?
Why do we suffer?
Why do we suffer? Yes, thank you. People, the biggest question in the world is, why do bad things happen to good people? And basically that means, why do bad things happen to me? Because I'm a good person. Right? Everyone is wondering, why? So much suffering in the world. Yes, someone at the back. Have a question? Oh yeah, the same question. Yes, these are the questions on people's minds. Who is God? Does God exist? Where's God when you need Him? Sometimes you come in front of Krishna and you think, it's okay for you, you're smiling, you're happy. What about me? What about me? What about my life, my problems? God, it really exists? Even we come to the temple, Well, we, even we have our doubts, isn't it, if we're honest. Some days we think, Krishna, really? So many questions. So every question that we ask has already been asked. You didn't, so far, no one here came up with any new question that wasn't asked already. I'm still waiting. If you can, we'll give you a prize at the end. If you can come up with a question which hasn't already been asked, then we offer our congratulations to you. Because the Bhagavad Gita answers every single question before you've even asked it. It's already answers there. So, shall we read one of Arjuna's questions and see whether you can relate to it?
Yeah.
Are you ready? Let's just see, maybe, just maybe, you may be able to relate to Arjuna's question. Maybe. Let's see. So this is chapter number 3, entitled Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is interesting. Spirituality is not about going to the forest. That doesn't mean you can't go to the park or you should go to nature. But spirituality doesn't mean to remove yourself from the world. Do you sometimes feel like running away from everything? Do you sometimes feel like, I just need to leave all of these people, leave this situation, I need some peace of mind? Yeah, you sometimes feel like that. Yeah. We can give you one of these and then you can take some else if you like. Let us know. We've got some severe ones lying around. You can walk away from it all. But generally, we are not... The spiritual path is not about walking away from the world. The spiritual path is about learning how to live in the world, but not be affected by the world. That's more powerful. So Krishna wants to teach Arjuna how to do that. So then what he teaches him is something called Karma Yoga. Karma means action. You have to act. Karma. Karma, if you're from India, karma. Sorry, I have to be careful because sometimes my London side comes out, sometimes my Indian side comes out. I'm a mixed up person. Karma yoga, karma yoga, whatever, however you want to call it. Yoga means to connect, isn't it? Yuj is the Sanskrit root to connect. So karma yoga literally means how to connect every single one of your activities in life to God. That's amazing. You can be don't just be a mother, be a spiritual mother. Don't just be a businessman, be a spiritual businessman. You can, anything you do in life, you can connect it to the spiritual reality, and in that way that activity frees you. So karma yoga is the science of how to act in this world in a spiritual way. But when we try to act in this world in a spiritual way, does it sometimes get complex? Isn't this world, it's a complex place, isn't it? Because it sounds easy on paper. Just connect it to Krishna. Sounds easy on paper. But then you go out, you have mortgages, you have bills, you have government regulations, you have so many things on your head. It's very difficult. And then you have temptations. Are there temptations in this world? Oscar Wilde, he was an English writer, he said, I can resist everything except temptation. Interesting, huh? So this is what Arjuna asked Krishna now. Krishna is saying, why you want to run away from the battlefield? You be in the battlefield and you be spiritual. So Krishna is making it sound very easy. Arjuna is saying, hang on, there's some complexity, it's not so easy. So what does Arjuna say? Arjuna uvacha atakena prayuktoyam papam chariti purusha annichan apivarshneya balad eva niyojitaha. Okay, I'll do the English because maybe you're a bit rusty on the Sanskrit. So this is the English translation. Arjuna said, O descendant of Rishni, that's another name for Krishna. O Krishna, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force. Relate to that? Even when you know you shouldn't do something, even when you know something will be bad for you, even when you know what you should do, why do we still do the wrong thing? I think so. It's something we're all going through. Purport. A living entity as part and parcel of the Supreme is originally spiritual, pure, and free from all material contaminations. Therefore, by nature, he is not subject to the sins of the material world. But when he is in contact with the material nature, he acts in many sinful ways without hesitation, and sometimes even against his will. As such, Arjuna's question to Krishna is very sanguine. Nice word, sanguine. As to the perverted nature of the living entities. Although the living entity sometimes does not want to act in sin, he is still forced to act. Sinful actions are not, however, impelled by the supersoul within, but are due to another cause, as the Lord explains in the next verse. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
So, do we have the experience in life that sometimes we know the right thing but we keep doing the wrong thing? This is perhaps the story of our life. Can you give me an example in life of how someone may want to do the right thing but somehow they just keep doing the wrong thing? Give me an example. Anything. Can be big, small, controversial, not. Yes. Excellent example. Yeah, someone knows smoking cigarettes is bad, but it's interesting if you look at cigarette packets. And you're looking at me thinking, why do you know so much about cigarette packets? It's interesting, when you look at cigarette packets 20 years ago, they used to have a sign, smoking may damage your health. Then later on, the message changed. Smoking seriously damages your health. Then later on, the message changed. Smoking kills. It's amazing how the message gets stronger and stronger, but the sales also get higher and higher. I think like, wow, we're supposed to be warning people here not to smoke. It's amazing. Someone can pick up a packet, read it, smoking kills, and in the very next moment, smoke a cigarette. Isn't that amazing? We just think, oh no, that's just life. That's just part of life. No, it's crazy. It's crazy. Something else?
Yes.
Lies. Yes. Do you know how many lies the human being says every single day? You don't want to know. You don't want to know. How many lies, big lies, small lies, lies about the future, lies about the past, lies which are outright wrong, or lies which are withholding information that you know you should really tell someone, but I don't know. Lies, lies, lies. So many lies. World full of. Even when we're trained to lie, actually. Become inbuilt. Anything else that you do which you don't?
Giving money to traffic police when you cross the light.
Really? This happens in Berlin? In India. In India, everything goes, Baba. In Berlin, if you do that, you'll get arrested. Don't do that here. Yeah, yeah, in India, oh my God. In India, if you have money, you can get anything done. Anything. Yes, so many things we do. So many addictions in the world as well. People are smoking. You want to know the top 10 addictions? Smoking, nicotine. Oh, sorry, that is smoking. Smoking, alcohol, narcotics, drugs. What is it else? Is it coffee? Yeah, coffee, gambling, social media, food. Yeah, food in general is also an addiction. Did you know also an addiction in the world today is work? Work, workaholic. And illicit things on the internet, pornography and so on and so forth. So many addictions in the world. So Arjuna is asking a very, very important question. What is it that impels us to act in the wrong way even when we know the right thing to do? And so in the very next verse, Krishna says that there is an eternal enemy that each one of us are facing. What do you think the eternal enemy is of the living being? The mind, okay, and lust, yes. Lust is sitting in the mind. The mind is not bad per se. I met someone yesterday whose name was Suman, is it? Suman is here? Okay. So Suman means a beautiful mind. But for most of us, we are Kuman, which means a not very good mind, because lust is sitting there. So what is lust? Lust is very, very interesting. It's said that all of us originally have love in our hearts, isn't it? Love is like the most natural thing to us. And the object of love is the Supreme Person, because we exist in a loving relationship with the Supreme. And then naturally, when we have that loving relationship with the Supreme, then we love everyone and everything. But as soon as we become disconnected from our loving relationship with the Supreme Person, and we become independent, then what we try to do is satisfy our heart, but in a selfish way. It's very simple. Love is selfless, lust is selfish. That's the difference between spiritual and material. Spiritual means selfless. Material means selfish. So then when we're trying to find happiness, when we're trying to find pleasure, when we're trying to find fulfillment in our lives, but separate from the divine, separate from the Supreme Person, then we are overcome by lust. Because every time we look at something, because we're unfulfilled in our heart, because we don't have love, loving relationship, then we try to fulfill that vacuum by exploiting things, by exploiting people, and by exploiting situations. Therefore you find this world is basically a world of exploitation. When two people come together, they may say, yes, we are in love. But most of the time, actually, they're trying to exploit each other. They're trying to get something from each other. Because love means that you come together to selflessly serve others, to selflessly give to others. But nowadays, we use the word love very, very cheaply. I loved that movie. Or I love this type of food. No, you don't love this type of food. You lust for this type of food. For example, if someone says, I love to eat crabs. I love crabs. No, you don't love crabs. You like to eat crabs. And therefore you take a crab, you take it out of the ocean, you kill it, and then you do all kinds of things, and then you eat it. And you say, I love crabs. Really? You do not love crabs. You like to eat crabs. It's lust, it's not love. So basically we have this emptiness within our heart. Each of us have a certain amount of emptiness in our heart. And because we have an emptiness in our heart of love, then we try to fill it by lust. And therefore what we end up doing is all of these things in the world that we know will not make us happy, but we still try to do it and get it because we need to fulfill the vacuum in our heart. So Krishna begins to paint a picture and help us understand why we always succumb to temptation. because we have a vacuum in our hearts. Would you agree?
Yes.
Some have a bigger vacuum, some have a smaller vacuum. But once you are fully connected with the Supreme in love, then there's no vacuum. And when there's no vacuum, then there's no lust. And when there's no lust, then you don't act in harmful ways. Yes, please come forward. I don't know if there's any room. Soon they'll be here.
Maybe I should also go back. Sorry, I'm just going to make sure my phone's off.
Yeah. So yes, we have to learn this art of not trying to enjoy the immediate and instead trying to wait and develop a deeper connection with the Supreme so we can fulfill our heart in a deeper way. Have you ever heard of the marshmallow experiment? It's very famous. At Stanford University, they brought all these children together. And what they did to the children is they put them in a room and they said, here's what, you understand marshmallow, right?
Yeah. Everyone's like, yes, marshmallows.
Remember those days. So they gave one marshmallow to each child. And they said, you have two options. Either you can eat the marshmallow now, or you can wait 15 minutes. And if you wait 15 minutes and you don't eat it, then in 15 minutes we'll give you another two.
What would you do?
Yeah, you think, yeah, obviously wait 15 minutes. But after about 7.5 minutes, you're kind of like, I don't know. Can I wait another 7.5 minutes? I mean, I could just have it now. Anyway, so some of the children just ate it within 15 minutes. And a small percentage of children waited. In other words, some children had the power of self-restraint. And then you know what they did? It's amazing, these scientists, they got like nothing better to do in their life. It's amazing. They caught up with these children like 20 years on in their life to see where they all ended up. And was there a correlation? Was there a correlation between all of those children who ate in the first 15 minutes and all of those who waited? Yes, there was a correlation. Because they found that those children that waited longer generally went on in their life to achieve much greater things. If you want to achieve something great in your life, you have to be able to give up the immediate temptation and embrace something that's going to be much better for you in the long term. If there's one line you go away from today remembering, remember this. Don't give up what you want most for what feels good now. If there's one thing you remember, that guy is a boring guy. But if there's one thing, don't give up what you want most for what feels good now. Because if you're able to be a little patient, a little bit restrained, if you're able to resist temptation, if you're able to overcome the easy thing that you can do in that moment and say, no, there's something greater I have to do, then in your life you'll achieve amazing things. So Krishna says to Arjuna, the reason why you do something even when you don't want to do it is because you have lust. And the only way to overcome lust is to develop love. But to develop love, you have to restrain your lust. Oh no, that sounds like, it sounds like a catch-22, isn't it? You have lust because you don't have love. But to develop love, you have to control your lust. So it seems like that's so difficult, but you can do it. Because through intelligence, through different ways you can control your lust and give up this tendency to always give in to temptations. And so, let me quickly tell you four things you can do to give up temptation. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to open it up and then we'll have a discussion. Is that okay? If you want to give up temptation, the first thing is conviction. You have to be convinced about the great thing that you're trying to achieve in your life. And when you're so convinced about the bigger goal that you have in your life, when the temptations appear which divert you from that goal, you won't give in to those temptations. But if you don't have something amazing that you're aiming for in this life, then you'll always give in to the temptation. So the first way to be immune from temptation is you have to be convinced about something much greater that you're aiming for. Why can boxers be so disciplined? Because they're convinced that I want to be the gold medalist. Why are they able to be so disciplined when they're in their studies? Because they're convinced, if I get my degree, then I'll be able to earn lots of money and I can enjoy even more. They're convinced. So are you convinced of the spiritual reality? Are you convinced of what it means and why it's so amazing to develop a relationship with Krishna, with God, with the divine? If you are, if you're fully convinced and inspired about that goal, when the temptations come, when the temptation to hit the snooze button appears at 4:30 or 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock every morning, you'll say, no, I'm going to get up because I'm convinced about my goal. One devotee used to say to me, you want to know the distance between the material world to the spiritual world? I said, you can tell me the distance? He said, yes. The distance between the material world and the spiritual world is the distance between your sleeping bag and the bathroom when the alarm goes off in the morning. Because he said, if you can make that journey, you can make that journey. Discipline. So first thing is, you got to be convinced. Shall I tell you the second thing if you want to overcome temptation?
Yes.
You have to be open. What do I mean by open? You have to have someone you can share your successes and failures with. You have to have someone you can be open with about your struggles. You have to be open with a friend who can give you advice when sometimes you give in to your temptations. You have to be open and honest and truthful about when you do fall prey to temptation. Because a problem shared is a problem solved. In English they say halved, but in Germany they're much more optimistic. Whether it's solved or whether it's halved, when you share a problem, when you share a struggle, then you get some strength. So always have friends that you can speak to, you know, when you're struggling with different temptations. Third thing, safety. If you're trying to stay away from a temptation, for goodness sake, don't place yourself in environments which are going to agitate you. If you're trying to give up alcohol, don't hang out at the pub. I mean, it sounds obvious, but people do these kind of things. If you're trying to give up something, you know, then don't go into places or don't be around individuals who will again fuel those desires within you. Safety. Create a safe situation which gives yourself some room. And the fourth and final thing is taste. If you want to give up a temptation, you know the ultimate way to give it up? Find taste for something that's better. Because once you find the higher taste, once you find something that's better, you look at that temptation and it no longer feels very, very attractive. Param drishtva nivartate. Yes, Krishna says. So if you want to give up temptation, it will cost you. C stands for conviction. Intellectual level. O stands for be open. Emotional level. S stands for safety. Practical level. And T stands for taste. Spiritual level. If you strengthen yourself on all four of these levels, you will be able to give up temptation. And then you will be able to achieve amazing things in life. And most importantly, by restraining this force of lust, you can develop love. How amazing if we could have pure love in our hearts. Then you wouldn't walk through this world, you would float through this world. But right now we are a bit starved in love. Because we think we have love. Sometimes we have a glimpse of love. Sometimes we have a feeling of love. But it's not substantial love, because in our heart there is still a lot of lust, a lot of selfishness. So Krishna is saying to Arjuna, just be patient, be calm. Try to control your lust and this desire to enjoy, exploit. And just engage yourself in the higher spiritual endeavors in a pure way, and you will awaken something much higher which will really satisfy your heart. And so that is the offer of the Bhagavad Gita. In the world today, when people are struggling with so many addictions and temptations, the Bhagavad Gita gives the highest perspective to overcome it. And that is what we are reflecting on today. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Srila Prabhupada ki. Okay, so over to you. Maybe you have some question, you have some comment. Yes, at the back there. I don't know if there's a mic, otherwise you have to shout loudly. Yes, Prabhu, yes.
So, I'm unable to frame a question, but I have a thought which is not framing properly.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So the thing is, being in a spiritual journey, for instance, you talked about having the goal of achieving something or getting a job, doing something. In spiritual journey, we are taught to not have anything like this. Like, why do you need a job for bigger money? You don't need money in this journey or position that boosts your ego, so you don't look after it. So there are a lot of things which happen in this process which makes you lose interest in your life. I know that there is some flaw in this thought process, but what is the flaw which...
Okay, so it seems that once we take up spiritual life, we lose all of our ambitions. We don't want to climb to the top of the corporate ladder. We don't want millions of pounds in the bank account. We don't want power, prestige, popularity. So what else is there then to live for? Is it that spiritualists just become unambitious? Spiritualists are the most ambitious. Srila Prabhupada came to America at 69 years old. And what did he do in the next 12 years? He circled the globe 14 times. He opened 108 temples. He initiated 5,000 disciples. He translated 60 books. He gave over 4,000 lectures. And he made Hare Krishna a household word in every single major city of the world. Now that seems to me to be a pretty inspired person. That seems to me to be a pretty ambitious person. One Srila Prabhupada said, I came to America with 40 rupees and now practically there is a mansion in every single city in the world. He said, what businessman ever did that? Of course, in the most humble way as possible. So Srila Prabhupada, he was the most ambitious, he was the most inspired. Spiritualists don't become unambitious. They give up the ambitions of this world because they say those things, they're too small. I am now the senior partner in the investment bank. Too small. So what? What's so good about that? But have you controlled your mind? Have you controlled your senses? Not that, I haven't done so. So spiritualists have ambitions. You know, one of the symptoms of a great spiritualist, avyartha kalatvam, they can't bear to waste one moment of time. Why? Because they got too much things to do in life, too many amazing things. One sure sign that you're not inspired in your life is if you're constantly subjected to oversleeping. Because the most inspired people in the world, they can't bear to waste any time because life is too valuable. So when you become a spiritualist, you become the most ambitious. But you don't become ambitious for the temporary things of this world. You become ambitious to connect to God. You become ambitious to serve the world. You become ambitious to make other people's lives beautiful. And therefore, this becomes so much a goal which consumes your mind that all these temporary temptations just disappear. I don't have any time. Does it make sense? So as a spiritualist, you are the most ambitious because you're trying to achieve the greatest thing. Yes.
Then how do you define or differentiate Maya and desire? So sometimes the desire could be end up in the Maya after pursuing 20 years. And do you think desire and Maya are both the same?
So how do we differentiate between desire and Maya? So desire is the volition of the soul. So all of us have desire. Whether you're a spiritual person or you're a material person, you can't live without desire. Because desire means to be alive, means you desire something. There's no question of becoming desireless. We are souls, we always desire. So everyone has desire. Now, there is the force of Maya, which is the force of material illusion. And when someone is overcome by that force, then their desires become material. So desire overcome by Maya, it's like a formula. Desire plus Maya equals material desire. Kind of rhymes, yeah? Maya plus desire equals material desire. Okay? As soon as you overcome Maya, then that desire becomes spiritualized. So it's not that Srila Prabhupada didn't have desires. Once there was a yogi, and they took a picture of him in the newspaper, and there was a mound of money, and he was like this, like, nah, nah. So it was like a, you know, picture in the newspaper. So Prabhupada saw it. He said, call the photographer and take a picture of me, and I'll be like this. I'll take all of that money. Material desire? Maya? No. I want the money so I can use it for serving Krishna. That is desire minus Maya equals spiritual desire. So if you bring Krishna into your life, then there's no more Maya. Krishna, Surya, Sama, Hoya, Maya, Andhakar. Yaha Krishna, Taha Nahi, Maya Radhikar. Krishna is like the sun. And Maya is like darkness. Yaha Krishna, wherever there is Krishna, Taha Nahi, there cannot be Maya Radhikar, any opportunity for Maya to be. So if you want to overcome Maya by just saying, no, I need to run, no Maya. No illusion, no, you won't do it. But if you bring Krishna into your life, then Maya will disappear. Because Yaha Krishna Taha Nahi, Maya cannot stay there. So you bring Krishna, add Krishna to every aspect of your life. Food plus Krishna equals prasadam. Music plus Krishna equals kirtan. I could give you many more examples. There's so many. As soon as we add in Krishna, then it all becomes wonderful. So you just add Krishna in. When you have a password on your computer, don't just be like, you know, I don't know, whatever you people, you know. Krishna 108. So then when you enter your password every time, Krishna is there. When you have, you know, at your home, put pictures of Krishna, isn't it? You're from India, you've seen. In the rickshaws, they don't care for the speedometer. Pull the speed, who wants to follow the speed limit anyway? Take it out, put a picture of Krishna, because if I'm driving and I hit someone, at least I'll see Krishna. You bring Krishna, anyway, don't do that here. You need to also follow the speed limit. But bring in Krishna everywhere where you can bring him in. When you're driving, hear about Krishna. When you're walking, chant Krishna's names. Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna nivesha. Yeah, this way or that way, somehow or other, bring in Krishna. Because Krishna consciousness is so beautiful, you don't have to give up your desire. Just connect all your desires and bring Krishna. Make Krishna part of the party. Krishna is not like, don't have a party. He's just like, let's have a party together. So just bring him in. Does it make sense?
Yep.
Thank you. Yes.
I had recently had a conversation with a...
I think there's a mic coming for you.
I recently had a conversation with a devotee, and he was very depressed. And I was talking with him, and I asked him, so what are the things that you like?
Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki.
Jai. And usually I went to Kirtan with him, you know, we would read books together and stuff, but this time he was just continuously depressed. He couldn't get out of the state of, like, really this depression. And, yeah, Kirtan, well, it's okay, you know, reading, okay, but I'm not getting happy. So how to break out of this mental, you know, state of being, like, absolutely depressed, although you have all the beautiful things around you.
So sometimes even when someone is surrounded by so much spiritual opportunity, still sometimes we're overcome by negativity, by feelings of depression. Sometimes depression is a very taboo thing in this world, like people don't want to talk about it. But you know, my understanding is that everyone goes through some level of depression in their life, isn't it? Some days you wake up, everything is fine, and you just think, I don't feel so, like, why? Everything's fine, yeah, but I don't feel. So Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that we are always subjected to the modes of nature. You see, the modes of nature are in the world. You understand the modes of nature: ignorance, passion, and goodness. So that exists in everything around us, but that also exists within us. And therefore, all of us are to some extent subjected always to being overcome by ignorance. And when the mode of ignorance within us becomes more and more prominent, then what happens is this feeling of depression, this feeling of uselessness, this feeling of lethargy, apathy, complete uninspiration about life, it comes about. So the real question is, how do we fight the ignorance within us? So the first very, very important thing is association with spiritual people. Because if you constantly are surrounded by people who are inspired, if you are constantly surrounded by people who are feeling, connecting, then it will constantly give you that inspiration to do it. Spiritual people carry us. But the problem is, what happens when we become depressed or overcome by ignorance is we tend to distance ourselves more and more from the spiritual people. But that distance is, you're creating a bigger, bigger problem. Rather, you need to place yourself with those people. Just like many of you are from India. So you know what it's like when you go on a Mumbai train. Isn't it? It's completely packed. And then your station is coming and you're thinking, how in the world am I going to get to the door? But you don't need to worry. You just need to get to some point in the carriage And then once the door opened, the door is always open. Anyway. But once it comes to the station, everyone starts rushing out and you don't even need to walk, the crowd will carry you. So association is like that. But oftentimes what we're doing is when we are overcome by ignorance, we create a gap. We move away from the devotees. We move away. We go into our little homes, in our little bubbles, and then we... So first thing is association. Second thing is, if you want to fight the ignorance which brings about this kind of depressive state, then we need to develop more and more sattva in our life. You'd be amazed. The environment that surrounds you, the food that you eat, the kind of daily lifestyle that you have, all of this has an effect on your mindset. Even the amount of light in your room has a difference. Did you know in the northern part of Sweden, during the winter time, they have like 23 hours of darkness because they're on that part of the globe. And they found that the suicide rates in that part of the year are much higher. Because there's a sense that when you're around darkness all the time, then you also develop that ignorance within you. When do people do the most stupid things? In the day or in the night? In the night. Because it all has an effect. So we need to... This is why Krishna's Bhagavad Gita is so amazing. Because it's a life manual. It's teaching you how to live and counteract all of these... People are trying to counteract it through medicine, through chemicals, through all kinds of artificial... And they're basically aggravating the whole problem. Now I will add one other thing here. If someone is going through such a thing, like therapy and things like that can also help. Sometimes we also just need to speak. This is also another important point. But therapy, it may not get to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is that we haven't found love, spiritual love. So therapy can help, and then ultimately we have to become connected. So... These were some ideas. It's a big topic and I appreciate you raising that because this is the reality. And if anyone is going through that, don't feel that there's something wrong with you, that it's only me. No, in this day and age, everyone goes through these things. So speak, be open, take help, change your lifestyle and you can come out of it. It's amazing. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, the verse says, Arjun put his bow down, depressed. Even Arjuna was depressed. Depressed? Really? Yeah, because we have a certain conception. Yes, he was depressed. He was overcome by that mode of ignorance. So, okay. I see many hands and then I don't want to miss someone else, so I just go, okay, yeah. Okay, here, and then I see a hand there.
Hi Krishna. So I have this question that I'm very shy about presenting Krishna to people. Then they like somebody sees my smartphone lighting up and there's Krishna. I feel very shy about it. Okay. I think it might be wrong. Maybe if it's wrong, what is wrong and how can I overcome this?
Your shyness about being a devotee of Krishna and showing, yeah. Yeah, there's a sense in which in life sometimes we're very self-conscious. You see, we all want to be accepted. We all want to be appreciated. We don't want to stick out from the crowd. In my life, I never wanted to stick out from the crowd. That was my goal of life, that I should merge into the crowd. But then what happened, when I was about 17, I shot up in height. So I was already like double the size of everyone. I'm like, no, God, I just want to stick into the crowd. Anyway, I thought maybe no one will notice. And then later on, I thought, let me just merge into the crowd. And then I became a Hare Krishna. Oh, God. then you completely stand out of the crowd. Then later on I thought, at least I'll merge into the Hare Krishna crowd. But then I became like a brahmachari in bright orange. So then again, I was sticking out. Then I thought, anyway, maybe I'll be able to just be a bit more low-key. And then nowadays, I kind of walk around with one of these sticks everywhere. And then you kind of like stick out again, you know? So I was also like that. I never wanted to stick out. I never wanted to like, you just wanted to kind of be in the crowd, be accepted. And you know, in the beginning, you can do that. You take some time to become comfortable with being a devotee of Krishna. Sometimes, you know, when there's an endangered species in the world, then they have something called a sanctuary, isn't it? It's like these very, like, you know, delicate birds. So they're in a sanctuary, it's very controlled, not subjected to the world, so that they can grow a little bit strong. And then when they're strong enough, they can fly. So maybe you need to be in the sanctuary. You know, build your confidence, build your conviction. But then at one point in your life, you need to fly. How long are we just going to be like just fitting into the world? When I joined the monastery, one of the monks told me, you have to resist the temptation to be normal. I said, we shouldn't be normal? He said, no. He said, because those who are now considered normal accept the values and principles of an insane world. But we want to be normal. We want to fit in. But what you want? You want to be normal? You want to fit in with this crazy world? It's crazy. This world is absolutely mad. Am I exaggerating? Maybe. We do all of these things. Like say for example, years ago, people used to go from place to place by riding a bike. And that was good because they got to the place and it was good for their health. But later on we became advanced. So then we have motorbikes and cars. So nowadays people whiz around from place to place in motorbikes and cars. And then at the end of the day, when they're completely exhausted, what do? They pay 30 euros, go to a gym, and sit on a bike, and sweat themselves, and go absolutely nowhere. But this is normal. This is normal. This is what we do. That's normal. Everyone should go to a gym, right? It's good for your health. Can you imagine what people 100 years ago would have thought if they saw someone in a room riding a bike, sweating like anything, paying for it, and going absolutely nowhere? I mean, it's absolutely mad. It's absolutely crazy. This world is mad. But we've been living in it so long, we think it's normal. And then what we try to do is we also try to be normal, and in the process we also become part of the madness. So at a certain point you think, why is it so mad? Krishna is amazing. He's beautiful. He's the one who can fulfill our heart's desire. We're looking for love. Be looking for relationship, for reciprocation. Krishna is right there. So why don't I want to tell the world about Krishna? So let it come naturally. In a certain point it will come. You'll become Krishna. You'll not just become Krishna conscious, you'll become Krishna confident. And you know what? Shall I tell you another thing? We're very self-conscious, but actually out there people are looking. Before I became a monk, I finished university, so I wanted to go to India. But, you know, students have debts, you know, no money. So I needed to get some money together to go to India when I was 21. So when I graduated from university, I decided to become a baggage handler at Heathrow Airport. So you know those guys, those people that basically throw your luggage and break everything. I was one of those guys. But I didn't break anyone's luggage. So I was loading these. So, you know, it was a very like, I don't know how they say in German, it was a very like a macho, you understand? Macho, like a very male-dominated environment. So like, you know, the men, you know, like. So like, I was getting into Krishna consciousness. So now I was thinking like, I want to chant, I want to read, but I couldn't do it in the staff room. Because I was like, these guys, they're not going to understand, you know. So what I used to do in Heathrow Airport is in the break, I used to go to like gate 1008, right at the other side of the airport, where it was quiet. And then I would sit on the seat, and then I would go like this, and then just do my chanting, my reading, you know, in peace. So once I was doing that, and then I heard a sound, Sandeep, that was my name before. Sandeep, I thought, wow, who's this? Maybe it's Krishna calling me. There's no one here. Like, it wasn't Krishna. And then I looked forward, and it was one of the people I was working with. So he looked at me, goes, what are you doing? What in the world are you doing? So I was like, oh my God, now I've got to explain to him. I'm a devotee, Krishna, chanting, meditation. I was like, oh. Anyway, I had to be honest. So I said, oh, you know, I do a bit of meditation. It's Krishna, nothing too dangerous. It's okay. He said, no, tell me more. Tell me more. He was like wanting to go in deep. Anyway, I had a 1-hour conversation with him. And this person was so interested. Not only that, he went back to the staff room and he told everyone, you know this guy? He's like, he's into Krishna, he meditates, he's into yoga. He told everyone. And then the next day I came into the staff room and they like rolled like a red carpet out for me. And they were like, sit down, this is now your Vyasasana. I became like the guru. I became the guru of like Air France staff room. You know? And I realized all of these people were actually into it. All of these people were actually asking these questions, but they had no answers. What did we do at the beginning of today? I asked all of you, what are the questions that people, every single person asks in their life? And all the answers are here. So, at a certain point, we become confident enough to know that Krishna consciousness is actually what everyone's looking for. Right now, we're not kind of convinced. Right now, we're thinking, Krishna consciousness is good for me, but I don't think all these guys are going to be into it. But later on, you realize, no, this is what everyone's looking for. Because what does George Harrison write in the beginning of the Krishna book? Everyone is looking for Krishna. Some know it, some don't, but everyone's looking for Krishna. So at one point you develop that confidence that, you know what, I've got nothing to be embarrassed about. I've got nothing to be, this is what everyone's actually looking for. So yeah, be confident, be bold. And if for some time you don't want to like go out there and advertise yourself as a Hare Krishna, that's also okay. You know, be comfortable. But with time, yeah, if you can share, that will be wonderful because you'll be able to touch many people's hearts. Good luck. Yes, Lara. Just let me know about the timings when we like Shravanti.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is, so if Krishna has plans for us, are we still free to choose?
If Krishna has plans for us, are we still free to choose? Yes, Krishna never takes away our free will. The one thing that Krishna gives us that he never takes away is our free will. But what we go on to realize in our life is that the plans that Krishna has for us are actually the things that I desire in my deepest heart of hearts anyway. Right now we're thinking, this is my plan, this is Krishna's plan, like, and we're thinking the plans are different because we have a different, like, yeah, Krishna, you got your opinion, but I've got my opinion, you know. I appreciate it. So most of the time you're right, but on this time I think I'm right, you know. So we kind of have this sense, this is called Pritag Bhav, in Sanskrit. It's called a mentality of separateness. We still think we're separate. But actually what happens when you advance in Krishna consciousness is you realize Krishna and me, we are on the same page actually. And whatever Krishna's plan is, if somehow I can embrace it, even when my mind says no, then what I'll actually realize is that, you know, Krishna is a pretty smart guy. He knows, you know, like if someone plays chess, I don't know if anyone here ever played chess, but the best chess players are able to think three moves ahead. So in their mind, they've already got all the different combinations worked out. If I move there and he moves there, then I do that. Or if I go there, then he goes there. Then, so they know all the moves, three moves ahead. But Krishna, oh my God, he is like 100 moves ahead. And he's moving the board and we're baffled. We're completely bewildered. Like, what in the world is he doing here? And we just don't know, because we only know two moves ahead, maybe three. Krishna knows many moves ahead. So we don't get it. And then we become bewildered. Like, oh my God, Krishna, I don't know, like, do you know what you're doing? But he knows. He's they say you have to live your life going forwards, but you can only understand it looking backwards. So when you look back in your life, you'll actually say, you know what, this guy, Krishna, my God, he is good, he knows what he's doing. So it's difficult sometimes to just put our plans to one side, because we're attached to our plans, we're attached to our ideas. You know, we want to do it in a certain way. And then Krishna comes and kind of crashes the plan, and we're just like... But with time... Vraja, Krishna's home is named Vrindavan, but another name for Vrindavan is Vraja. And Vraja etymologically means to walk. So it's explained that the residents of the spiritual world, they're always walking with Krishna. They always walk with his plan, walk with his desires. So we need to sometimes learn to let go a little bit of our plans. Because we're very attached to our plans. It's difficult to let go of things. But when we learn the art of letting go, one of my friends says, let go and let God. Let go and let God. And maybe try it once and see what happens. And then you might think like, oh, that worked out. Maybe I can try it again. And then you try it again, and then you try it again, and then you just be like, okay, he knows what he's doing, let's go with that one, you know. So yeah, they say if you want to make Krishna laugh, tell him your plans. We can see some people have experience of this. So yeah, we want to just let Krishna... You see, yeah, anyway, I sit here and it's so easy to speak, you know. I can sit here and say it like, oh yeah, and think like, yeah, that makes, like, I'm even convincing myself when I say this. But then when I go out there, I'm like, you said that in the class, and why don't you live it? It's difficult. Anyway, some thoughts. I saw a hand here, and then I see hands there, so I'll take one here and then... Yes, Hare Krishna.
It's like you talked about that the thing with the lust and stuff, and it seems a bit like many people are kind of, including myself, are like stuck in an awkward middle position. Uh-huh. I might call this like a stalemate, you know. I don't know if that's the right image for it.
Stalemate?
Yeah.
In what sense?
Well, I mean that, you know, you use... It's an awkward middle position. I mean, you theoretically know what you would like to aspire for. You have that theoretical conviction. And the other part of the game is also very strong. And I guess being in the grasser kind of stage that also brings that with it. You know, it's like you kind of almost, you also answered the question already that patience is like the name of the game, but could you elaborate on that? Is there anything else than patience to move from more in the favorable direction of love and away from the lust?
Yeah. Have you ever had the experience of driving on a motorway and then you get so distracted that you kind of miss your exit? And then you're driving past the exit and you're like, oh no, I just missed the exit. And in that moment, all you want to do is just turn around. But you can't do that. You'll be finito. So then you have to accept it. I missed the exit. And then it's kind of like, it's annoying. You have to keep driving and you feel like I'm driving away from the place I want to go. But you have to do that. And then you have to drive. And then you come to the next exit. You slow down. You go on the roundabout. You come back. And then you drive back. And then finally you get the exit. So our life is something like that. That we made all of these decisions and we created a certain life for ourselves. And then we think, I missed the exit. It was all about developing love. But now I've got all these other things in my life. I feel like there's so many things which are disconnected from Krishna. But you can't just overnight just like turn it around. You have to change your life bit by bit. Keep adding more Krishna in. Taking away those things that don't contribute to your journey. Chipping away. Srila Prabhupada said this human form of life is like a block of hardwood and somehow you have to carve Krishna out of it. So when you think of a sculptor, that's what a sculptor does. They chip away at their life and create a very Krishna conscious life. So I think that's how we are going to make our life very, very beautiful. Going from lust to love is not overnight, it goes in degrees. And the more we add in Krishna, the more we learn to connect things consciously to Krishna. And the more we start letting go of behaviors, attitudes, activities, situations, relationships that don't contribute to my spiritual growth, the more we're going to find that that love is coming about in a more prominent way. And so... yeah, we have to become sculptors of a spiritual life. I don't know, I'm saying something general. I don't know if this is helping. Or
thank you very much. Perfectly. Yeah. But the motorway can very much relate to that.
Yeah, so it's frustrating, you know, because in that moment we just want to turn around. We know where we want to be, but we can't. We have to accept, I missed the exit. So it's difficult, but we have to accept and then we have to be patient and know that, but have a vision. So you have to have a vision in your life. In 10 years, in 15 years, I'm going to be here. You know what Mark Zuckerberg said? He said, most people overestimate what they can do in 1 year and underestimate what they can do in 5. Interesting statement. Because our mentality is we want to just get everything done now. And therefore we overestimate. But we don't have the patience to understand that if we do something regularly over a period of 5 years, you can do amazing things. So we should have a long-term vision. There's an app on your phone, you can buy it. Not buy it, get it for free. It's called Become a Sage, Page by Page. So it's very good because it's like you can write like Krishna book and you can say I want to finish it in 1 year, and then what it will do is it will calculate for you how many pages you have to read every single day. And I like it very much because it just shows that if you do something every day, you achieve something amazing. Okay, here, let's do it. Let's say you wanted to read the Krishna book. How quickly do you want to read the Krishna book?
2 days.
2 days?
Come on. Can't do
that. Say we want to read the Krishna book in 6 months. Okay? Krishna book, month six. You know how many pages you have to read every day? Take a guess. 10? 16? 12? 20? 5 pages. What's that? Piece of cake. We underestimate the power of regularity. 5 pages every day? That means if you read 10 pages every day, you can read it twice in 2 months. Or if you read 5 pages a day for 1 year, you'll have read it twice in 1 year. That's amazing. Imagine someone made a vow, I'm going to read 5 pages of Krishna book for the rest of my life. That might mean by the end of your life, you've read Krishna book 50 times, or maybe 100. And then maybe, just maybe, antakale chamameva smaran muktva kale, maybe at the antakale, maybe at the end of time, you maybe, just maybe, you'll remember Krishna. And if you do, so we have to be, therefore Rupa Goswami says, utsahan nishchayat. You have to be enthusiastic but patient. Patience without enthusiasm, mode of ignorance. Enthusiasm without patience, mode of passion. Enthusiasm and patience, goodness. So we have to factor that in. Yeah, it's... I can keep going and going. I don't know, what do we want to do? There's a... What do we do? Carry on? Because it's like, then there's prasadam, and I'm also here.
Maybe 1-2 questions.
Okay, there were 2 hands here, so then these last 2, then, yeah.
It's stemming from the previous one that you just answered.
Just a moment.
Okay, just take the mic, Mataji. Yes. This your first time to the temple?
Yeah,
okay, welcome. Thank you for being open-minded and coming.
Thank you. So my question is stemming from the previous question that you just answered about letting go. So I want to understand, with certain circumstances in life, especially when, say for example, someone loses their baby, or a baby is born and they immediately die, or a baby is born with diabetes or cancer, and especially when it's someone really close to you, how do you let go in these circumstances and believe that there's still a plan in place and trust? And do you ever in life get to know what that better plan was?
Thank you for raising that question. It's very nice. This world is a cruel world, isn't it? We live in a world in which so many things happen, so many trials and tribulations. Sometimes we become so confused about why things are happening, why God would allow this to happen. When we're saying let go of things, we're not saying forget about it. When we say let go of things, we're not saying just erase that part from your life. But what we're saying when we say let go is stop fighting in your mind about that point in your life. To let go just means to accept something and to now focus on the future. When something bad happens in our life, a very difficult situation, then we let go in the sense that we look back. First thing we have to do is accept it. Because if we don't learn to accept what's happened in life, then it will be very difficult to move forward. The next thing we try to do after accepting is we try to deeply pray, study the books of wisdom, speak to spiritual people and ask them, what lessons could I learn from this? What is life teaching me through this? Our understanding is that nothing happens in life by chance. So even the most difficult things that happen to us, inside of them is a lesson that is helping us to move towards eternal happiness. So then the second thing we do is we try to learn the lesson. And then the third thing we do in our life is we focus on the future, trying to live that lesson and live a better life. And like this, we have to keep moving forward. We're not going to sit here and say everything that happens in life happens for the best. Some things just hurt. It's not that everything in life happens for the best, but there's something good we can learn from everything that happens in life. And so some things are just tough. But that doesn't mean we can't still draw from that situation something that will help us to move forward in our life. So to let go doesn't mean to forget or just to erase something, but it means to stop fighting it and learn something deeper and then move on in our life. I don't know if that helps. It's a general answer, and I'm sure there's much more. But thank you for asking that.
In yeah. connection to that, I wanted to continue that. Is attachment to people, appearance, is still a maya? Having attachment to appearance, family
members? Is attachment to family and your family members, is that maya? I was mentioning this morning that when, after Arjuna heard the whole Bhagavad Gita, Krishna told him, the wise lament neither for the living nor the dead, we're just the soul. We move on. Arjuna heard all of that. And then what happened on the 10th day of the battle of Kurukshetra? His son Abhimanyu was killed in the Chakra Vyuha, the military phalanx of the Kaurava army. They surrounded him. He knew how to get in, but he didn't know how to get out. And therefore they killed him. And when Arjuna heard that his son had died, then what did he tell Krishna? Take me to that place. And when Krishna brought him on the chariot to that place where Abhimanyu, his son, had died, was laying dead, then what did Arjuna do? He didn't quote verses from the Bhagavad Gita. He cried. Why is he crying? That's maya. No, it's not maya. It's natural. We're humans. We have emotions. We have relationship. It's not maya. But he wasn't attached, because after what happened, he grieved. And then what did he do in the very next moments? He picked up his bow and arrow and he continued on in his life. So in our relationships of this world, we have to have affection. How can you bring up a child as a father if you don't love your child? You have to have affection. That's natural. But we should not be attached. In other words, after giving our love, our giving our best service to that personality, then we step back and we say, ultimately, we are all spirit souls on a deeper journey. I've offered my love and care and affection, and now, after all is said and done, this soul has to go on their journey. So, this is called detached attachment. Does it make sense? We should be affectionate, we should be kind. It's not that when you become a devotee of Krishna, you just become a stone heart. Someone dies, no, it's okay, they've moved on to another. No, it's natural, we cry. But we don't cry so much that we become overwhelmed and unable to move on in our life. Because in that crying, there is also knowledge. Make sense?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your class. I have a question. If I live with not devotees and very materialistic person, but I want to make progress and I want to have association with devotees, but I should live with this person who... So when I come to the temple, so I make progress. When I come home, so I make digress. I don't want this balance. It's very, very complicated situation. How should I do in this situation?
Okay, thank you. You see, it's not that when you become a devotee, now you delete everyone in your phone book, you block them on WhatsApp, and you just move away from the world, and you don't interact with anyone in the world anymore. We can't live like that. We're living in the world, we have relationships with people, we have work colleagues, we have other people we live with, we have to interact with them. The art of Krishna consciousness is learning how even in relationships with people who are not spiritual, we can try and bring something into the relationship that will help me in my spirituality. Maybe all of those people you're surrounded by who are not spiritually inclined, maybe you could serve them. Maybe you could bring them a cookie offered to Krishna. And maybe they will be very happy. And maybe that will also start to spiritualize your relationship with them. Maybe you could spike their drink with some maha water. That's what I used to do to my parents. Maybe. And maybe you could see that maybe, just maybe, Krishna has surrounded me with all of these people so that I can serve them. And maybe by serving them, maybe by helping them to get connected to the spiritual reality, maybe that will also help me to become a better spiritualist myself. So when we're looking in relationships, we shouldn't just always see what can I get from this relationship. When I come to the devotees, I'm getting a lot of inspiration. But when I go to the non-devotees, then I don't get anything from them. But maybe you can give. And in giving, you receive more. So it's difficult because they have different goals. They have different aspirations. They have different values. Therefore, you interact with them, but on a certain level. Once there was a monkey, and the monkey saw a crocodile swimming down the river. So the monkey said, I want to go on a trip down the river. So the crocodile said, jump on. So the monkey jumped onto the crocodile and they were going down the river. And then at one point, the crocodile stopped in the middle of the river and said, I want to now eat your heart. And the monkey said, oh, you want to eat my heart? You should have told me before. I left my heart in the tree up there. You left your heart in the tree? Okay, then go and get it. I'll go and get it for you. And then the monkey came up the tree. And then... you know what he did. So that means you can associate with people, but you don't have to bring your entire heart. The confidential things of your heart, maybe only those who are on your path, they will understand. And you share those parts of your life with people who will understand that. And then with everyone else, you be kind, you be compassionate, you be a servant, you be an agent of goodwill. And then you will see that all of them are also helping you in your journey. And you may be surprised. Just like I gave you the example of me working in the airport surrounded by all these so-called materialistic people. Maybe everyone is looking for Krishna. And if we're kind, if we're compassionate, then maybe we may be able to spark something within them. So let us try to do that. The people who are surrounded by were not put there by chance. Everyone who's around you is there to play a certain role in your life.